Hey there, friends. Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Pure Gravel Podcast, where today we get a chance to spend some time with one of the biggest breakout stars of the 2021 gravel racing season, Mariah Wilson. Mo was second place on the Pure Gravel Power Rankings and joined us today from her family's home on the East Coast, where she's tucked away for the holidays, enjoying a little time away from structured training, taking in some hiking and other cool winter-type activities. To get a sense of just how good a year she had on the bike, check out this list of palmares from the 2021 season. Began the year with a win at Rock Cobbler. Bookended that at the end of the year with a win at Big Sugar. And in between knocked down second place finishes at RPI, a third place at both Belgian Waffle Ride San Diego and Rooted Vermont, and in between an impressive ninth place at Unbound. In our conversation today, we touch on how she took a very non-traditional route to becoming an elite cyclist, building her massive endurance engine, developing her ability to suffer as a D1 collegiate skier before shifting her interests over to the bike. We talk a little bit about this ever-important topic of the spirit of gravel and how it can be maintained while still establishing some rules to ensure that the playing field is level for everyone. You'll also hear that Mariah is an athlete that works a very important full-time gig in the bike industry while still putting in the time she needs in order to compete at the level that she does. For certain, we'll be hearing a lot about this wonderfully talented athlete in the coming years because she's established herself as a force to be reckoned with on the gravel racing circuit. We hope you enjoy our conversation with Mariah Wilson.
How are you?
I'm really good. You're on the East Coast today, huh?
I am. I just got here on Sunday. I'm here for the next 3 weeks, just visiting my folks for the holidays.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. You're missing nothing here on the West Coast other than a lot of rain. So.
Yeah, I know. I left the rain with me in California. It was perfect timing, actually.
Good for you. Are you able to get a lot of training in while you're out there? Is that part of the plan too? Or is this more we still off season and just riding for fun when we can?
Definitely getting back into training, not doing a lot of like structured stuff. It's mostly just been like base miles. So I'm doing that here, but I'm like mixing in trainer rides with skiing, like some ski touring. Hopefully there's not a ton of snow here. And like hiking, like I go for a hike right now. There's not a lot of snow. So,
I want to start maybe back at the beginning. Well, first of all, congratulations on second place in the Pure Gravel Power Rankings for the year.
Thank you.
It's got to be interesting to receive that after not even knowing you were being in the running for it because the way we announced it.
Yeah, I had no idea. I was just kind of like woke up one day, like opened Instagram, like saw that I was tagged in something, and I was like, "Oh, cool."
Did you get your cool custom trophy yet, or is that waiting for you at home and on the West Coast?
I did. I think I opened it on Saturday. I came back from a ride and like saw that I had a package from you guys, and so that was cool.
Very nice. Taking up a prominent spot in among all your other massive trophy collection, I'm sure.
Yeah, have an assortment of different things from this year. It's always fun to kind of look back and have those little memorabilia.
Yeah. Cycling's like you have a full-time hardcore day job.
I do.
Sideline for you, I guess. So that'd be a great place to start. Like, and I know it's an industry job too. So like, what are you doing? Like how much time are you even getting to ride and train and do all the other stuff?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm still figuring it out. It goes through. So my job goes through waves, I'd say, of like busyness. But in general, I'm able to be very flexible with my hours. So I can kind of work when I need to or want to, I suppose. Like I do sometimes work early or work late at night if I want to go for like a long ride during the day. But in general, in California, like it's warm enough even in the winter where I can get up and I can go riding pretty early in the morning, like leave around 6 and get back by 9 or 10 and then work the rest of the day. And that was kind of my schedule last winter when I was in full training mode. and will probably be like what I'm mostly doing this winter as well. And then for racing, it's like, I definitely do. Yeah. With traveling and stuff and racing, I take probably a little bit more time out of my day to just prepare and travel and stuff than the normal employee. And then I work weird hours. So I've made it work so far. We'll see how it goes this year with an added, just like more races, more traveling, more aggressive schedule.
Do data analysis and project and product planning?
I do. Yeah. So I'm a demand planner for road bikes for the USA business. So I do sales forecasting primarily. Right now, our sales forecasting is a little bit funky, as you can probably imagine, just because the supply is extremely limited and we're like oversold for the next year on like everything. It's really like looking, it's working a lot with like supply chain in kind of the short term and like understanding what our inventory position will be for the next 12 months. And then it's looking further out beyond that and trying to plan for the business and predict what we think our growth will be in certain categories and for certain bikes and where we might see growth or decline as well in sales based on trends in the market and whatnot. So
From what I'm reading and seeing, the planning is really just let's get the ships on shore and unload the product, and then we can get product out to everybody. It's probably not that simple. I'm probably making it too easy by saying that.
Oh yeah, no, it's very complicated right now. The logistics are such a big piece of it right now. Just shipping costs have gone up so much, and the times are incredibly long. Our lead times are just insane when you take all that into account. So it's definitely a challenging time, but it's also a good thing. It's you know, business is good and cycling is growing, so it's a good problem to have.
I know personally that getting jobs in the cycling industry can be really tough. It's a bit of a catch 22. You can't get the job without experience. You can't get the experience without a job. Yeah. I bet having your background as an elite level racer didn't hurt, but how did you tumble into the industry? How did you get that job?
Yeah, it was kind of serendipitous. I had just moved to San Francisco after graduating from college, but I didn't have a job yet. And I knew Specialized was in the area. I kind of wanted to work in the outdoor industry, not necessarily in like the bike industry, but I kind of started looking at just their job postings here and there. And a job for a demand planner came up, and I didn't know what demand planning was at the time. I was like, what's this? It was like kind of a mixture of like data analytics, and seemed pretty quantitative, which is, I was an engineering major in school, but really kind of got into engineering through math. And like, I was just like, yeah, more of a math science person and like working with numbers. So it seemed kind of up my alley, and it didn't actually require any experience, which was unusual compared to all the other jobs that I was looking at. It was more about like, it was more like qualitative, I would say. And definitely was looking for someone who had kind of some experience working in the bike industry, which I didn't at the time. Like, I had worked at a bike shop in high school, so I guess I had that. I had connections somewhat to the industry, so I think that definitely helped as well.
And I'm sure they don't mind at all you racing at the high level you are and really enjoy the great success that you've had this year.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when I first started, I wasn't even racing yet. I kind of got into racing around the same time as I when I started my job. I think everyone, like my team is definitely, I feel really supported by my team and by my colleagues. And I think they enjoy like watching me grow as a racer. So that's been fun to kind of be able to share that with my coworkers.
Well, if you weren't racing then at that time, where did you build this engine that you have now that made you so successful? I mean, that's a serious question, because there are a lot of people just that natural ability and they don't find it until the first time they get on the bike and they're kicking everybody's butt in the local group rides and what have you, or they vault all the way up from Cat 1, you know, Cat 5 to Cat 1 in a single year. But if you hadn't really built that engine through racing, where did it come from? Just natural ability and massive VO2?
I think I do have a genetic like inclination towards endurance sports. I've always kind of felt that way. I was an alpine ski racer in like growing up and raced D1 in college. And so that was kind of my athletic background. And even though alpine ski racing is very different from cycling, I think like a lot of the training that I did do for it with the kind of cardio based training, just to be able to recover and ski day after day after day all winter long, I think that really helped lay a foundation for kind of the endurance that I've been able to gain pretty quickly over the past couple of years. So I think between like that, having that foundation, and then probably having like a pretty strong genetic background as well, are two of the main components. But yeah, I don't know. I've also worked really hard over the last couple of years since kind of getting in more serious with cycling, with training. And so it hasn't just come out of nowhere, I would say, but I do feel fortunate to have probably some good genes.
What were your specialties? Were you slalom, giant slalom, downhill? What did you do the best in?
In high school, I did the best in speed events, so super G and downhill. I had hoped to try to make the US ski team off of those events, but unfortunately I had a couple of knee injuries that kind of set me back and kind of led me to just pursuing a collegiate career for skiing. And then in college, you only race the tech events, so slalom and giant slalom. So that's what I focused on just in college, and actually got quite a bit better at those. I wasn't very good in high school. But yeah, when you train every day at something and you're around other people, I was really fortunate to be on a really strong team of girls. Some of the best year group, and they pushed me a lot and taught me a lot. So,
well, that helps, no doubt. And I'm sure you've carried that same mentality over into the cycling world, right? Whether it's working with a team or working with a coach and getting better techniques and things like that, because certainly the bike handling is a big, big component of that. If you didn't have that, you know, growing up, that's a sharp knife that has to stay sharp. How easy was that transition once you started to find cycling and learning to grow that skill set that you needed to grow in order to be successful like you are?
Yeah, I mean, I think I have always relied on other people to a degree to push myself. I am like super intrinsically motivated to train. So that came pretty naturally. But then when it came to racing and like the intricacies of racing and strategy and all that, like I think I've gained so much over the past year, just being able to compete with some of the best riders out there, like the Katarina Nashes of the world and the Rose Grants of the world. Like they've been out on the circuit for so, so long. And I've been really grateful to have had the opportunity to race with them a lot and just like pick up on the little things that they do. Cause I think that the details matter so much. You can be the strongest rider out there, but when it comes to race day, like luck certainly plays a factor in it, but the smaller little details that can be overlooked, like that's kind of sometimes what can make a race. So I think that's been a huge part of my transition into cycling, and I'm still getting better. I'm still learning. It's an exciting time. There's still so much for me to learn. I get like, yeah, really jazzed up about all the little things that I can still tweak and improve upon in my performances. So I think that's been something that I've carried over from skiing into cycling that's allowed me to progress fairly quickly, I guess, maybe.
Did you have any big kind of welcome to the big time moments when you're in a race or at the starting line and you're like, oh my God, that's Katarina Nash right there, that sort of thing? Like any of those at the races that you were at where you're like, whoa, I'm at the this pinnacle of the sport right now and I'm right on par with everybody else?
Yeah, I think, well, this year, I think I've had a couple of those moments at grasshopper races in California. Like even before this season, I did a couple of them in right before COVID. And I think there was one race where I was like, it was Kristen Faulkner won, I was second, and Allison Tetrick was third. And it was like my third gravel race ever. It was actually all on road. But that was one moment where I was like, okay, I think I maybe have something here. And I was like, oh my God, Allison Tetrick. I didn't know her very well at that point. We're friends now, but definitely felt like starstruck to be like on the podium with her. And then earlier this year, I think I had a similar moment with Katarina Nash at another grasshopper in May. It's kind of one of the first races back, and you know, had obviously not raced in like a year and a half. And I think she was like top five, but I think I was second in that race or something. And to be in the mix there with like her and Amity and a ton of other really strong NorCal women definitely like gave me some confidence leading into the rest of the season and some of the bigger races that followed.
My sense in talking to some of the women that I've talked to is that the camaraderie among the group of women racers is really strong. Like it's a very open and a very friendly community among them. Would you agree with that? And do you have any like specific examples of how that kind of manifests itself throughout the past couple of years as the sport has really started to bring about more women racers and more women participants in events like this?
Totally. I mean, I think like when we're actually out racing, it's usually pretty like fierce. Certainly like depending on where we're at in the race or something, if it's the beginning or just like in a massive peloton, it'll be pretty like casual chit-chatting and stuff. But then like, I don't know, as you get towards the end of the race, everyone's definitely quiet, kind of in the zone, just trying to fight as hard as they can. But then like generally when you get to the finish line and people start rolling in, like everyone's just congratulating each other and just super positive. Like that competitiveness kind of just like switches off and everyone becomes just friends, which I really like. And it's something that I appreciated a lot from skiing, or I think it's like carried over from skiing for me. Cause it's also similar in that sport as well.
Individual base like that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You had a big year by any standard, and it kind of got kickstarted with the Rock Cobbler, our friend Sam Ames up in Bakersfield. How did you come about even finding about the Cobbler and knowing it was all about, and what was your day like there? That's always just a blast of a race to be at, whether you're at the front end or the back end of it. How was that?
Yeah, that was a crazy race. For those who don't know, it's like a ton of single track through like a BMX, not a BMX, like a motocross course sort of.
Yep.
And yeah, I forget how I found out about that race. I think it was like a couple friends of mine were trying to do, had heard about it like the year before or something, and they wanted to do it. And at the time, like no other races were really happening. And so it just kind of made sense to go down there. It's not that far of a drive from San Francisco. So yeah, it was like really dry, really dusty. My bike sounded terrible. Like my drivetrain was in really rough shape pretty early on, I think just from the dust or something. I don't know. but I started out like pretty conservative, I would say. Like I felt really, really just kind of pace myself well, like went out at my own pace and took over the lead from Kathy Pruitt like halfway through maybe. And then my friend and teammate Maude Farrell was not far behind. She definitely made up some ground and was catching up to me in the end, but I was able to hold off and take the win in that race, which was exciting. I think it was my first win ever, maybe. Definitely of the season. So yeah, it was a fun race.
He does a great job. I'm looking forward to going back up there with him in a couple months here, because it's just always so much fun up there.
Yeah, for sure.
And then you kind of capped off your season with a big win at the inaugural Big Sugar race.
Yes.
How did that go? Like, obviously the win is awesome, but first time event in a unique part of the country that's, you know, super welcoming and receptive to cyclists. What did that win mean for you? How did that race play out over the course of the day?
That was a really fun race. Super awesome to be there for the inaugural event. I had a kind of a rough start to the race. I wouldn't say rough, but I definitely didn't have great placement, like leading into kind of the opening gravel segment. I was kind of a little bit off the back, had to work really hard to kind of catch up with some of the lead women. It was super fast and like pretty loose gravel. I ran a little bit higher tire pressure than maybe is ideal for that course, but I was definitely kind of anxious about puncturing because there were a lot of casualties out there. Saw a lot of people on the side of the road. It was not a good day for flats. So I wanted to protect myself as much against that as possible. I think leading into the first aid station around like mile 40 or something, I caught up with the rest of the women and we worked together for a little bit. And then eventually I kind of put on an attack. I wouldn't say it was really an attack, but there was this short, steep kind of paved climb that I put a little bit of a gap on. The woman I was riding with, Maddie Ward. And from there, I rode the rest of the way by myself. I got dropped. I was with a group of men for a little bit, but they dropped me. So I kind of rode solo until the last like 20 miles. I found a guy and we traded poles for the rest of the way. It was definitely, I felt pretty vulnerable being out front for so much of the race. It's always feels a little bit risky when you separate yourself from other women and are work like being by yourself when they could be working with another group. So definitely was constantly like looking over my shoulder, being like, is anyone there? but was really excited to roll into the finish alone and cap off my season with a win.
We're in this really interesting time right now in gravel racing, cycling here in the U.S. in particular, but with gravel racing, this evolution of this while trying to protect the spirit of gravel, we're also forced to start putting some guardrails around the sport, whether that's independent waves for the women, how we handle feed zones, teams, etc. Do you have any particular viewpoints or perspectives on that? Like what would be your, if you had to draft a set of rules for a race, how would that play out for you? What do you think is the ideal situation while trying to balance this protection of the spirit of gravel and keeping it cool and funky and unique?
Yeah, well, I think first off, I definitely agree with the concept of like allowing individual race directors to set their own rules. I think that they should have the flexibility to create rules that make sense for their event based on size and location and all these other factors that come into play. I think sometimes mass starts 100% make sense, and sometimes they definitely don't. They're probably not safe. And so I think having races with different sets of rules also allows riders to choose what they want to prioritize in their race, like, or maybe they're not even racing. Maybe they're just, participating and want to do a fun ride. And that will kind of help guide them towards an event that maybe is a little bit less geared towards or less attracted towards a lot of the pro high level riders. So I think that is a way to, like, I hate the term spirit of gravel, but it's like a way to preserve the spirit of gravel. I think that kind of is the spirit of gravel, is that, like, gravel means different things to different people. So there should be events that cater to those different needs in a way, if that makes sense.
No, I think that's a really good way to look at it. Allowing each event to have its own uniqueness, right? And then that in turn challenges the riders to determine how they individually will tackle that.
Exactly.
As proof that we do our homework here at Pure Gravel, I found a quote. I found a quote from you that I find really, really compelling, and that is, "I'm comfortable with being uncomfortable." I think that's such a. It doesn't apply to just cycling. I think that's a great way to go about living your life, because there's so many uncomfortable situations we have to be in on a daily basis. How did that mentality develop? Is that just something you were born with, or something that you honed over years? And it certainly translates to the bike, because the ones that can suffer the best, the ones that can be uncomfortable the most for the longest, are typically the ones that are going to win. But I think the same thing applies to life.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think I originally kind of developed that concept not through cycling, but kind of similar parallel to, like, the suffering I met, like, mentality, in high school, like training for skiing. Skiing is a very demanding sport in a different way than cycling, but, at the same time, a lot of the training that I did was really intense, like really hard. I don't know, like, kind of a lot of, like, I don't know the best way to, best analogies, but like a lot of CrossFit style workouts. Just like really intense training sessions throughout the summer. And then in the winter, like, skiing is also not the most comfortable sport, in that you're, like, often standing at the top of a freezing cold mountain wearing, like, one layer of clothing, right, like a tight skin suit that's just not insulating at all. And you're like, you're chilled to your bone, like, all day long, and exposed to the elements at all times. And it's very uncomfortable. Like, everything about it can be uncomfortable. And so, I think I've been in a lot of different situations throughout my, like, athletic career that have made me very comfortable with being uncomfortable. And it's something that that's like a mentality that I've adopted when it comes to athletics. But then I think, like you said, it also applies to life and work and relationships and everything else.
Having those challenging conversations you don't want to have, whether it's work or, like you said, relationships and how you run your life, whatever it may be. That's fascinating. And a great, in a way, skiing might have been the perfect sport to prep you for the rigors of cycling at that level, you know, just in terms of whether it's the weather or the bike issues or the competition. You've now got a benchmark for knowing that, I can suffer like this. I know what it means to be really uncomfortable and still perform at a really high level.
Yeah, exactly.
Saw the big announcement. Looks like you're in on the Grand Prix for next year. Challenge those. We're gonna take on the mountain bike part of the sport now too, a little bit. Or is mountain biking always been part of your training regimen and racing as well? I know you mentioned the Grasshopper. I know those guys do some mountain bike only races, but are you comfortable on the mountain bike? Looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm definitely really excited. I mean, I'm certainly not as good of a mountain biker as a lot of the other women in the group. But I did grow up mountain biking. That was kind of my introduction to cycling. So I have pretty solid skills. I wouldn't say I'm going to be the fastest one out there when it comes to, like, you know, plowing through a technical section, but I can usually hold my own pretty well. I want to refine my skills a little bit, work on my speed, especially when it comes to descending. I think that was one area that I probably lost the most time on in Leadville this year was just the technical descents, just like a little bit timid there. So yeah, I'm excited. I mean, the Sea Otter course, I raced Sea Otter this year. I'm not exactly sure if it's going to be the same, or if they're going to switch it up, but it was pretty mild. It wasn't anything too aggressive. And then I don't know about, I don't know how you say it. Schwamigan.
That one's new to me too.
I don't know. I don't know anything about that course. So we'll see. but yeah, I'm excited to do more mountain biking, and hopefully I'll be able to even add a couple more mountain bike races on top of the Lifetime Series as well.
Have you already set the rest of your schedule? Are we going to get to see you at any of the Belgian Waffle rides this year?
I think I'm planning on doing the San Diego one. Maybe BWR Asheville. It's the week after Unbound, though, so we'll see. yeah, maybe, I don't know. We'll see about the rest of them if they fit in. But yeah, I more or less have my my schedule pretty much dialed, at least the ones that I definitely want to do, and then might add in some more kind of last minute, depending on timing and stuff.
Sure. And how the body's feeling and how your, you know, how your fitness is and everything else. Cause as hard as you guys can go at that level, the body does need to have a little rest and repair time every now and then. Right.
Yeah, for sure. That's recovery is important.
Yeah. Well, it's been fantastic watching you this year and seeing all your great results. And I just know that we love the spirit, not to beat that word to death, but the spirit that you bring to the race. And it's been a blast just watching all the great success that you've had this year.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. And I know it's going to continue on into next year, and we're going to wish you all the best of luck. And maybe there's another cool hand carved trophy in your future after this year. I don't see why not, given all the great success you've had already going on.
Well, thank you. I hope so too. We'll see. A lot of work to put in still.
Enjoy the time off there with your parents and happy holidays. And we really appreciate you taking time here to chat with us at Pure Gravel.
Awesome. Thanks, Jim.
You got it, Mo. Take care.